From the Financial Times in New York, I'm Sujeet Indap, and this is FT News. Joining me here is Robert Wright, the U.S. industry correspondent. Hi, Robert. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. How are you doing?
Good. Well, we've had some pretty grim economic and financial and business news to start out the year. Markets are down, worries about global economic growth and oil prices, but there has been some good news in the U.S., specifically U.S. auto sales, which have rebounded pretty sharply. Tell us about what the figures have come in at and where we've come from since the financial crisis.
Well, what we've discovered today, Tuesday, is that it looks like U.S. auto sales for the whole of 2015 are going to come in at 17.5 million light vehicles. That's cars, sports utility vehicles, pickup trucks, the kind of things that we generally see ordinary consumers driving about. But the significance of that is that that is an all-time record. The previous record was set in 2000, so that's a long-standing record, and it's a huge rebound from the levels that we saw immediately after the financial crisis.
And so what were those numbers like at the financial crisis? It was something like half that, right?
Well, in 2009, it was down to 10.4 million. So this is quick bit of mental math. That's about 7.1 million rebound, about a 70% rebound, 70% up on the levels we saw just 6 years ago.
Right. So we've got these record sales, Robert. At the time, 6 years ago, there's been a huge rebound. GM required this bailout from the government. Chrysler essentially failed, and there was this merger with Fiat to save it. Ford didn't require that, but they had their own problems. What do we know about where the big U.S. auto manufacturers are right now?
Well, really, the standout thing about where the auto manufacturers now is that they're in an immeasurably healthier state even than they were in 2000 when this record was previously set. Back in 2000, very large numbers of the sales were to large fleets like car hire and so on. Far more of these sales are to ordinary consumers, they're retail sales. They're getting much better prices. The vehicles look much more competitive with foreign competitors. Their overall cost base is lower. So
right. That
2009 crisis was really a crisis that didn't go to waste for the U.S. manufacturers.
So they cleaned up their balance sheets, and as far as labor goes, it's much cheaper to run a manufacturing plant in the U.S. than it was, say, 7 years ago.
They got rid of a lot of their pension and healthcare costs, the kinds of things you typically see a troubled company sorting out in the U.S.
Yeah. And so at the same time, we're seeing these record sales. There is a worry that younger Americans, so-called millennials, are shunning traditional auto purchases. They're living in cities. They're doing rideshare. They're riding bikes. They're not starting families as quickly or buying houses. Where does millennial behavior fit into these numbers?
Well, I think, as you know, I'm a cyclist, so I've always rather bought into this view. I get about by bicycle, so I don't see why other people aren't going to do the same. But it does seem that part of the picture here, that there's a whole bunch of different things that have contributed to this record, but part of the picture here does seem to be that the millennial generation, the people in their 20s and 30s, do finally seem to be buying cars. For a long time, they weren't buying cars, and there was a huge concern on the part of the auto industry that maybe they wouldn't. And it does seem that now, I think I heard a figure, something like 28% of purchases at the moment are by millennials.
So the economy has improved. They've gotten jobs or leaving their parents' basements, and they're doing traditional kind of things we expected.
They're doing the traditional things you'd expect.
So, Robert, there's a couple of other external trends that may play into the trends we're seeing in auto sales, specifically cheap oil, which has been going on for a couple of years now, and cheap credit. How do those factor into the results we're seeing in terms of auto sales?
Well, I think there's very little doubt that cheap credit has been enormously important to the recovery of the auto industry. We're seeing lenders extraordinarily willing to lend to people who are probably not terribly good credit risks.
So subprime auto lending is back.
Subprime auto lending is back in a big way. That's fueling an awful lot of the sales. The role of the low fuel prices, perhaps a little bit more ambiguous. This boom in sales of sports utility vehicles started a little bit before the oil price started falling. But on the other hand, it is unmistakable that only 3 months after the oil price started falling, the average fuel economy of a new vehicle started falling as well. So people just took that price signal extraordinarily quickly to go out and start buying less fuel-efficient vehicles. And that is really something that we see brands like GMC,
right,
General Motors, premium truck brand, doing extraordinarily well, doing much better than the wider company. We can perhaps get a little bit carried away with quite how important an effect is, but it is clearly important.
And so these statistics on sales comes at an interesting time for the audio industry in terms of the calendar. So this week is the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, and next week is the Detroit Auto Show. And there's a lot of hype or attention about what's going on with some of the technological advantages in cars, not for this year or next year, but kind of broadly where the industry is going. So what are those things we should be paying attention to?
Well, it strikes me that what's interesting about what's going on with some of these shows, and I'm off to Detroit on Sunday, as you know, is that we're seeing a kind of bifurcation between the stuff that's making the news and the stuff that's actually selling. The stuff that's making the news, an awful lot of it is these electric vehicles, autonomous vehicles, things that are either selling not at all or right. in absolutely minuscule quantities. And in the meantime, people are going out and buying, you know, big SUVs in many cases. The low fuel price is really encouraging people that you don't have to settle for something small and hyper fuel efficient. You can get something bigger. There have been fuel economy improvements in SUVs and so on.
Things seem pretty rosy, probably not reflected in stock prices because these auto manufacturers have international operations which have been hurt badly. But give us some kind of predictions on where you think the industry is going in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, whether it's consolidation, whether autonomous cars, connected cars, electric vehicles become important. What's kind of the intermediate to long-term outlook?
Well, a couple of things we need to think about. One of the things is the previous record was set in 2000, and clearly the U.S. population has got bigger since then. So there is a long-term question, and I still think it's a long-term question, about whether car sales per head will ever recover to the level they were back in 2000. I think they probably won't. But it's also a very cyclical industry. It tends to do worse than the overall economy in bad times mm-hmm. and better than the overall economy in good times, such as we're seeing now. So I think we are probably going to see a little bit of running out of steam, maybe over the course of this year, certainly the following year. And actually, just because it's becoming more expensive to borrow, a lot of the pent-up demand that has probably fueled mm-hmm. what we've seen going on is beginning to be satisfied. But also just a few slightly alarming trends. You can see that the value of incentives, the money that a dealer will give you to buy a vehicle, has returned to pre-recession levels. So that's a sign that car makers are beginning to worry more about fighting for market share than profitability. So that's definitely a warning sign, I think, for a lot of people.
And would you ultimately predict, in whether it's 3 years or 5 years or 10 years, the big three in Detroit becomes the big two, that there's going to be some kind of global consolidation just because there's probably too much capacity out there?
Well, there has, for a long period, there has been too much capacity, particularly in Europe. I'm not sure we're necessarily going to see consolidation in the U.S. Three is a relatively small number of big car makers for a market like the U.S., but I mean, it's entirely possible we'll see consolidation in other parts of the world. You see some car makers that are definitely struggling. But, you know, for the moment, I think really the story in the U.S. is everybody wants to be in the U.S. market, and it's doing very well. It's extraordinarily profitable for people, and I think for the moment people are just relieved, only 6 years after possibly the industry's worst crisis, to be in one of its greatest ever boom times.
Well, very interesting. We'll look forward to your dispatches from Detroit next week.
I'll look forward to it.
Thank you, Robert.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.